afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming to our presentation. I'm going to let JD introduce himself and a little bit about what we're about to tell you, and then get started.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's somewhat humbling to be speaking at BIF. Neither Jen or I are classically trained animal breeders, and the topic was raised last fall, and I happened to be standing outside Dr. Dunn's office, and I heard the question Jen posed, well, what's the right size cow? If you read literature or articles in various magazines and publications or the different publications bull peddlers are putting out, people say, well, you need small cows, and then other people say you need large cows. And so the question was raised, what is the right size cow? And so I poked my head in the office because I wanted to hear this answer. And Dr. Dunn says, well, why don't you find out and let me know? And by the way, JD, you help her. So we embarked on this process, and initially we thought it was going to be a short one. We'll just kind of do a little bit of a lit review, and in a couple of weeks we'll get that answer, and no big deal. Well, it's kind of like jumping off a cliff in a way. There's so much complexity to it, and the more we found out, the more we really realized that we didn't know anything at all. And so we're going to take you on a little bit of a journey, the journey that we took, and to explain a little bit about the beef industry and how efficiency maybe was measured in the past, and hopefully what we'll provide is some tools for you as producers to take out to your individual operations and really evaluate what the efficiency is on your place, what it means to be efficient, how can you measure it, what are some ways in the industry that people have tried to measure it and maybe aren't right. So that's the focus of this presentation. As was mentioned, this was we presented this at NCBA last January. I don't think we've caught too much flack for it. So they invited us here anyway, and it's a pleasure to be here. So we're going to define efficiency and how the industry segmentation affects the way you measure it and how these, whether you're a cow-calf or feedlot or yearling or you're in a packing house, how you might measure efficiency in different ways and what's that and how those things are related. The genetic potential versus the environment. Anybody in animal breeding knows that that's a huge interaction and something that's been trying to measure for years and years. How metabolic weight affects efficiency on the cow herd, specifically different size cows, how metabolic weight changes, some of the tools, the best measurements, optimizing breeding and production systems, and then herd size and stocking rate specifically. And then we'll kind of summarize and conclude. But.
All right. We're going to kick things off with a definition of efficiency. And in classical animal science, efficiency is defined as the ratio of total cost to total animal product from females and their progeny over a given period of time. And the goal is to decrease this ratio. You have input over output. You want your denominator, you want output to be bigger with the same amount of input. Kind of in the common world at large, you think of, you know, miles per gallon or, you know, miles per minute. It's output over input. And so that's kind of how we're going to talk about it here, just for consistency's sake. And you want to increase this ratio. Again, you want more output for the given amount of input. In cattle, and in all animals, there are two aspects of efficiency. There's biological efficiency, which is beef or meat produced to feed consumed, and economic efficiency, dollars returned to dollars invested.
And we don't, just to make this clear, and sometimes you can, the way I think about economic efficiency is really cost effectiveness. Is it cost effective to do what we're doing? If we put that extra dollar into this cow herd, or one way I like to think about it is a new set of corrals can be really efficient. You can buzz through those cows and it works smooth and you save time and this and that. But if you're only working 10 cows through the corrals, is it really cost effective per animal? Well, probably not. And so that's kind of what we're talking about between, and cost effectiveness has a lot to do with the level of investment that you put in. And so, and we can get into that a little bit, and we will as we go along, but it really depends on your production system and the environment that you're working in.
It's already complicated. Next, we'll talk about industry segmentation. Everyone knows that there's some pretty distinct segmentation in the cattle industry. Cows start off on the ranch, and there's a set of characteristics that define an efficient cow herd on the ranch, including early sexual maturity, high rates of reproduction, low rates of calving problems, longevity in the cow herd, minimum maintenance requirements, and, you know, that bottom line, the ability of your cow herd to convert their energy into the greatest possible pounds of weaned calf. But then, the other huge segment is in the feedlot. And the traits that are efficient in the feedlot are different. You want high growth rates, later puberty, lower propensity to marble, heavier mature weights, and greater visceral mass. And in kind of the 60s, 70s, there was a surge of continental breeds coming into the United States. And this was on the tail of the Green Revolution, which essentially made corn and high concentrated grain cheap. So you now have this cheap source of feed, and you want genetic potential to be able to capitalize on that source of feed. So you bring in your growthier, higher production potential cattle. And of course, the driver behind all of this is, you know, where do cattle end up? They end up hanging on a rail in a packing plant. And in a packing plant, within the physical constraints of that packing plant, literally how high that rail is off the ground, they maximize their efficiency by hanging the most meat possible, the most pounds possible on one hook. Okay, so this is just to recognize the drivers of what's shaping the cow size in our
industry. And most of the people in this room have lived that. And you've seen this over time, that the average size of the cow herd, or the average cow in the cow herd, the size has increased over time. The number of cows has decreased. We're producing as much beef or more as we did before. And, you know, Dave Nichols mentioned that last night, that it is a driver to this business. Cows, they're being more and more productive. And it's a rational response. There's the economic environment surrounding this whole production system, and it requires, to a certain degree, more production, more efficiency within the system. Now, this cow size increase, whether it was conscious or unconscious, it occurred, and it was in direct relationship to this economic environment around the ranch. Just so that, and it's nothing you're not aware of, but this is the kind of the process we went through to try to explain the system and figure this whole issue out of this conundrum. So.
And as you know, the system is designed, cattle move from the ranch to the feedlot. And those drivers, there's a little bit of a conundrum because those are two different environments. You know, on ranches, you have limited energy oftentimes, forage-based. The environment is variable, and we're going to go into that in a little bit, but you all know that everyone in this room comes from different places, and your ranches look different. It's a high investment per unit environment, and the goal is cow efficiency. Alternatively, in the feedlot, you're in a high energy environment. It's grain-based, and it's essentially a highly controlled environment. You've taken a lot of the variability that exists naturally out of it. There's still some weather and parasite variability, but it's a much more controlled environment, and it's a lot lower investment per unit. And your goal in the feedlot is growth efficiency. You want that animal to turn energy into its own weight, and cow efficiency is turning energy into calf weight. So it's a little different. And, you know, it'd be great if, you know, we could just separate those systems, but obviously all cattle move between them. And so it's a balancing act of what works best in one system and what works best in the other. You cannot maximize two variables. So it's a balancing act. You're optimizing. And this is because the biological traits supporting the efficient use of the two resources, forage and grain, are markedly different. And that is due to literally biology and physiology.
So what this means to us, the ranch and feedlot segments are different. If you're going to maximize either segment, there's cows that can do that. You know, there are cow types, and there's certainly traits and specific breeds and different, and we can select for this, and they can be highly efficient in the feedlot, or they can be highly efficient in the cow herd. There isn't a lot of overlap. There are trade-offs that exist between these growth and reproductive traits. And to not recognize that as cow-calf producers, we do ourselves a little bit of a disservice. However, the marketplace creates a balancing act of these trade-offs, right? If you're too far one way or the other on cow size or on these production traits, if they don't produce at all, you're going to get discounted in the marketplace. Guys know this. I mean, it's the marketplace drives what we do in conjunction with our production environments. So we're just outlining these differences in these two systems and how they interplay. And the marketplace is the driver.
Now we're going to go into food energy and specifically how that impacts biological efficiency. And that biological efficiency depends on the interaction of the genetic potential of any given animal and the environment that it's in. And specifically here we're talking about feed resources. Every bite of food that a cow eats is going towards something, okay? And it's partitioned as energy in this order: maintenance, growth, lactation, and reproduction. And the easiest way for me to think about this, and perhaps for some of you, is a cow takes care of herself, then the calf at her side, then the calf to come. That's how she partitions energy. If she cannot take care of herself or the calf by her side, there will be no calf to come. And to expand upon this, maintenance energy is the first partitioning. And there's a difference between high maintenance energy and low maintenance energy dependent cattle. High maintenance energy requirements correlate with high milk production, high visceral organ weight, high body lean mass, low fat mass, high output, and high input. And these are the opposite of low maintenance energy requirements and the traits that correlate with those requirements. So, I mean, you have this balance and trade-off. This is what correlates with maintenance energy. And in thinking about this, part of my original question when I approached Dr. Dunn was, well, you know, it's maintenance energy. If they have low maintenance energy, they're efficient, right? You know, that's what I'm reading. That's what the game is, right? And this is the most important slide of this entire show. No, maintenance energy is not, maintenance requirements are not, it is not equivalent to efficiency. Why? Take it back to the original definition of efficiency. Efficiency is a ratio. Okay? It's output over input. Maintenance requirements is just an input. It does not indicate the output. And this is the take home of this presentation. Low maintenance requirements does not necessarily mean or correlate with efficiency, because it's only half of the ratio.
And to reiterate what Jen said, low maintenance cows are not necessarily efficient, and on multiple levels. And one of them Dr. Dunn mentioned this morning is how does maintenance affect longevity? If you're not maintaining something, one of the big drivers is turnover in your cow herd for profitability. You got to keep turning over that cow herd. If those cows aren't maintaining themselves, maybe they're not going to be, and this is just speculation, obviously, but maybe they won't be in the cow herd as long. So your turnover is higher. So you're going to have higher depreciation costs with that cow herd. What effect does that have long term? Short term, it might have a little bit of an increase in cash flow. Maybe long term, it's not a good thing at all. From what Jen said, high maintenance cows are not necessarily inefficient. It just depends on that input output ratio. And you got it. If you're going to manage something, you got to measure it. You got to know. You got to match cost to benefit by activity over time. And until you're able to do that, or have the information system be able to do that, you're just kind of selecting for things and really not sure what's going on and what the drivers are for your particular operation.
Okay, moving on to our next component, we're going to talk about the interplay between genetic potential and the environment. And, of course, at PIF, there's not a lot of surprise that there is a wide array of genetic potential in the beef industry. We have, there have been tiny cattle around and huge cattle around for centuries. This was one of my favorites. That is a full-grown cow. That is the smallest cattle breed in the world in India. And this is, an enormous Charlie Bull at a show in France. And this is the largest existing cow in the world currently living. So, we all know that there is genetic variation in the world. We also know that there is environmental variation. And I touched on this before. We have people from all over the nation and the world in this room. Different places have different feed resources. You're in the Intermountain West is a lot different than the Gulf Coast, and Florida is a lot different than the Great Plains, is a lot different than the Midwest, especially if you pre-feed.
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, why is that creepery there? We kind of laugh about it. But these cattle have genetic potential, right? And this producer is trying to capture that. And they might have more genetic potential than what this lush pasture has to offer. And so it's kind of amusing in a way, and it's not exactly a low-cost operation. And I am not one to say whether or not that's profitable or not. It could be. You'd have to look at his accounts and his books and see what his investment is and what his cost to produce that pound of beef is. But that's in some ways that's a rational response. He's capturing that value that's in that cow herd, right?
I would never have thought that before. Months of journey. Given that I just showed you pictures of, extreme variation in environment, but there are areas of the nation that are very similar. You've got huge regions. The west of the 100th meridian, there's a lot of commonality. The entire southeast and the Midwest, there are commonalities within regions. So just, you know, keep that in mind. Everyone is in a slightly different region, but everyone probably has someone who's in a similar environment.
Well, and we ask these cows to do a lot. You know, it's not just regional differences. There's differences in spatially, these regional things, and over time. Within a year, between years, there are huge differences in the places that we run cattle. South Texas, for example, we were down there for 2 years. 18 months of it, it didn't rain. Somebody just turned the spigot off. It was one of the most severe droughts, I don't know, for a long time. They do these drought surveys and things, and it was unbelievable. And then one day, somebody turned the spigot back on, and it rained for a month, 20-some inches. And so we're asking that cow to adjust to these types of environments. And the amazing thing is they can do it. If they have the right gene combination, if they have the plasticity and the adaptability to survive in those environments, it's pretty amazing that they can do that. And they can take advantage of that forage resource.
Kind of on a related note, talking about genetic potential and environmental conditions, there is a study done by Jenkins and Farrell out of the Meat Animal Research Center. And this is kind of the cornerstone study of our presentation and a lot of the discussion about cattle efficiency. And what Jenkins and Farrell did was take 9 different breeds of cattle, 3 British breeds and 6 continental breeds, and measure their efficiency at different feed levels. These are their results, and don't cross your eyes. I'll walk you through it. On the bottom is the amount of dry matter intake. And probably the most amazing thing about this study, to me, who's never been exposed to any of the animal science research much before this, was they measured every single bite that an individual cow ate. This was not an estimate of feed intake. They actually knew exactly how much intake an individual cow had. And then on your y-axis is efficiency in pounds of calf weans over pounds of feed. On the left side, you have essentially a low feed environment. And the most efficient cattle are your British breeds, your smaller cattle with lower production potential. Okay? And then on the right side of this graph, which is a high feed environment, the order is flipped. Your continental breeds, your breeds with more production potential, larger breeds, are more efficient than your smaller breeds. Okay? Why? This is a definitely colorful, I hope it's helpful, graph of a little bit of that explanation. And it goes back to remember how energy is. It's maintenance, growth, lactation, reproduction. Cattle with low production potential have lower maintenance energy requirements, lower growth requirements, and so those requirements are met, and they have the feed, the extra energy can go into lactation and, most importantly, reproduction for the cattle system. But a cow with a higher production potential, perhaps her personal energy needs are not being met for maintenance, growth, or lactation. And so she doesn't have energy left over to reproduce. Alternatively, at the high feed environment, now that cow with higher production potential, all of her maintenance energy, growth and lactation needs are being met. she has energy left over to partition into reproduction. She's pregnant now. The cow with low production potential already got pregnant. You're pregnant or not. You can't be more pregnant. And she also doesn't have that lactation potential. She may not be as heavy a milker. So she cannot turn that extra energy, those extra calories, into weight for her calf. She just gets fatter, which is an inefficient use of energy. Okay? That's just hopefully a helpful explanation of that graph. And just to, you know, bring it back, low feed environment, high feed environment. Okay? This is real world stuff.
So I think you probably ought to ask my wife about having four kids. I think you can get more pregnant. There is, obviously, there's variation in genetic potential, particularly, you know, different breeds do different things, and that is a real advantage to our industry. And also, there's variation in feed availability. Your region, depending on your soil type, your vegetation cover, your precipitation, whether that's natural or artificial through irrigation, I mean, each ranch has their own specific production parameters. There is no recipe for this. And so for us to come up here and tell you what the right cow size is, you know, I guess one thing I learned in grad school is the answer, if somebody asks you a question and your answer is, it depends, you're covered. Yeah. Grad students figure that out pretty fast. And so cows with low production potential are more biologically efficient or have the potential to be in low feed environments. Cows with high production potential and more biologically efficient in high feed environments, whether that's naturally occurring or supplementation. If you have a cheap resource of supplemental feed, you can afford to have potentially that cow with higher growth potential.
And to delve into that a little bit deeper, I think part of my quest in life is to understand people are behaving rationally and understand, you know, what's driving that rationality. So we analyzed 165,000 head single breed database, and we looked at some stuff, and we found that, and this is not shocking, as cow maintenance energy EPDs increase, cow weight increases, okay? And as cow maintenance energy EPD increases, calf weight increases. Bigger cows have bigger calves, and the average cow size in the United States has increased, okay? Why? Well, for every unit increase in maintenance energy requirements, which correlates with you need 12 additional megacalories per year, you get the payoff is 3 additional pounds of weaning weight. So now you have a ratio. That's marginal return over marginal cost, okay? And a rational decision is, if your marginal return is greater than your marginal cost, you're acting rationally to do that. And we looked at corn and calf prices from 1975 to 2008, and we adjusted for inflation, and we priced 3 additional pounds of calf weaning weight and 12 megacalories of energy, which we chose, it's 8 pounds of corn. And you can see that at no point did you lose money. The marginal return was always more than the marginal cost. And that is rational.
Now, we're not saying if you go out tomorrow and feed each one of your cows 8 pounds of corn, you're going to have 3 pounds more weaning weight in the fall. What we're saying is the additional growth potential that you've incorporated in that cow herd can be the maintenance cost of running that cow can be offset. And if you have a cheap available source of supplemental feed, sometimes you can afford to do that. Now, some guys have done that by increasing stocking rate, for example, and maybe hurt their range resource. Or some guys have that cheap available source of protein or of energy. However, something to think about, how many guys, when they produce supplemental feed on their outfit, compare it to the cost of producing that same amount of energy per unit to corn? It might be something, I don't know if you guys have or not or what, but it might be something to look at if it makes sense for you and what it costs you to put up a ton of hay or whatever supplemental feed you might be feeding or compare it to some other byproduct or something that you might have available at your ranch. So the increase in average cow size in the nation is a rational response. I mean, there's this feed out there. There's cattle types that have the potential to take advantage of it, and so they've been incorporated. Those genes have been incorporated into the gene pool of the nation's cow herd. If a cow, big if, we should have capitalized that and made it italics and bold and everything else, if a cow will get bred in her specific environment, whether that's natural forage or cheap feed, the additional maintenance energy requirements of a larger cow is more than paid for by the additional weight of her calf within a specific environment.
Our last component, before we start looking at kind of big picture how to put them all together, is metabolic weight. And metabolic weight is based on something called Kiber's theory. And the theory basically says that the larger an animal is, the more efficiently it uses energy. An elephant weighs 220,000 times more than a mouse, but it only eats 10,000 times as many calories. Okay? So as a percentage of its body weight, it's more efficient. And you can calculate this based on weight for cattle. For instance, if you have a herd of 100,000-pound cattle, that is equivalent to 87 1,200-pound cattle. And, you know, the simple math is they weigh 20% more, but they're only eating 13% more. Okay? And the importance of this is in stocking rate. You don't have to feed more if you can adjust your stocking rate correctly based on weight.
So the correct adjustment for herd size is based upon metabolic weight. So I guess I pose a question to the producers of the room. If cow size has increased over the years from 900 to 1,300 on average, or whatever the number you want to use. I mean, for every producer, more or less, cow size has increased. What's happened to your stocking rate? Do you have the same number of cows that you ran 20 years ago? Do you have more? Do you have less? If you have the same number, how much more supplemental feed are you feeding? And which is more costly? Is the supplemental feed more expensive, or is just cows grazing less? It's just something to stimulate thought.
Okay, now we've gone through all the components of how we looked at this, and we'll move into what tools can you use to think about this on your own? One is measuring efficiency. Everyone should recognize this, a very common measure in the industry of, well, you know, that cow weaned 60% of her body weight. Really efficient cow. This is deceptive for a couple reasons. One, both of those are phenotypes, not genotypes. So they're heavily impacted by the environment. Also, it's a confounded ratio in that factors that aren't directly accounted for in either the numerator or denominator impact both. A big one of those being milk production potential. And this is very supported in the literature. This is not an accurate way to measure efficiency. And a big part of that is cow weight has to do with feed intake. And feed intake is very complicated to A, measure, and B, accurately estimate, because it's impacted by so many things, anywhere from body condition to forage quality to how healthy the animal is. And just be careful about being confident in feed intake estimates, because it's so affected by so many variables. And the other problem with the calf weight over cow weight is that it does not take into context the absolute overriding factor in efficiency, which is reproduction. Two pairs standing side by side out in the pasture, one calf may be 100 pounds heavier than the other. The gut reaction is, that cow is more efficient. That calf might be 1 or 2 months older than the calf standing next to it. And B, both of those cows are way more efficient than their sister who didn't get pregnant at all, who is going to wean 0 pounds of calf. Okay? So the if in the if your cow can get pregnant, reproduction overshadows everything when it comes to efficiency. So on a total cow herd view, total pounds weaned over cows exposed is a much better way to measure or think about efficiency, because cows exposed is taking into account reproduction of your herd.
So calf weight, cow weight, not a good measure of efficiency. A lot of selection is done that way, or it has been in the past. I know, and if you travel around and you visit livestock producers, and particularly purebred breeders, you might pull into the ranch, and before he or she introduces you to the spouse or the kids, they want to take you out and show you the cows, right? And that's pretty common. And you might be kind of driving around, and you'll see a cow there, and no calf, dry cow. What's going on here? Yeah, she didn't get bred last year, but boy, she sure can raise a shiny calf, right? I mean, that's the reality of the industry, and maybe next year she will have one, but those genes will be sent throughout the population, and maybe it is a shiny calf, but is it really what the industry needs? And reproduction obviously is the overriding driver in efficiency, and any measure done on the ranch, it has to be included.
Our next tool are breeding and production systems, and just like calf weight over cow weight, culling for efficiency is kind of seemingly an easy thing to do. I'm going to really bear down. I want a good cow. I'm going to cull hard. The question is that a good leverage point? Maybe not, for several reasons. A, cattle have really long generation intervals, so the generation turnover is slow. It's an inefficient way to accomplish efficiency. And within your herd, there's probably a small selection differential. And on top of that, heritability is related to culling, and how heritable are the traits that you are culling for? Does anyone know for sure? And then compared to bulls, individual cows contribute a fraction of the genetic makeup of the calf crop. So bull selection is a very high leverage point compared to culling to accomplish efficiency. Another aspect is breeding systems. Purebred, the problem is that no breed excels at all traits, but breeds can complement each other and maximize or optimize whatever you want and to fit their environment. So crossbreeding is a high leverage point.
There really isn't a better tool in an animal breeder or commercial cow-calf producer's toolbox than heterosis. It's real. I think sometimes, you know, we forget about it. If you're selecting for a particular color or some type of a particular grid or some of these things in the marketplace, it's easy to forget about the value of heterosis. There isn't much we can do in the livestock business to produce or to increase our efficiency of a cow herd by 25%. And if you have a crossbred female, particularly if you breed that female to a terminal sire, your efficiency has just gone through the roof. It's real. It's out there. There's some people that have taken advantage of it as an industry. It really hasn't been adopted. And it's there. It's in the toolbox. And I'm not going to say it's free because those pounds still come from somewhere, but that potential is, right?
The final thing to think about is your production system. What and when are you selling? Selling at weaning, it's really important to capture all the milk potential that you can, because that's how that calf is putting on weight. Retaining ownership, it's less important that you have more ground that you can make up after. Milk production potential plays a role in that calf's life. And additional, what are you selling? You're selling per pound, you want to maximize pounds. If you're selling feedstock replacement heifers, you want to maximize head. And this goes into the stocking rate and the metabolic weight analysis.
So compared to bull selection, culling is an inefficient way to improve efficiency, which isn't new. We're kind of addressing some other things that have certainly been out there in the industry for a long time. Heterosis is powerful. Nothing new. Been around for a long time. People have known it. Seed corn industry has known it for almost 70 years. It's there. When and what you are selling is a huge driver in what kind of cow herd you have and what your production system is. In this age of volatility in the commodity markets, maybe you want to have flexibility. You know, your big you might want to have is the ability to go either direction, because you don't know from year to year how you're going to market those calves, if you're going to retain ownership or not. So a good risk management tool might be to have that moderate calf. If you want to maximize and try to push and outguess the market, you know, maybe you want to go one way or the other. Maybe you want to sell calves. Maybe you want to retain. It's a choice we as producers have to make. We just have to be aware and conscious of the fact that we're making that choice.
To kind of pull all of this together, and because at the King Ranch Institute we always try to tie everything into economics, we attempted to do an economic analysis. And just to lay it out for you, in very simple how we thought about kind of cost structure. On our x-axis here, we have, just think about it as the 100,000-pound cows and 87 1,200-pound cows. So you have your 87 heavier cows over here and your 100 lighter cows on the right-hand side. Well, your average weaning weight is going to decrease because you have smaller cattle, and on average, they're going to wean smaller calves. But your total pounds weaned are going to increase. However, your costs are also going to increase. Your feed costs, if adjusted correctly based on metabolic weight for herd size, your feed should be the exact same, okay? But your non-feed variable costs, and this would be medical, transportation, a little labor, they are increasing, as are your assets. You have more cattle on your balance sheet. In addition, you have more depreciation. So those are the costs that are increasing, but you are getting more pounds. And to set up this analysis, we had to make some assumptions, and neither of us are economists, but we hope and think that we're being reasonable. We priced calves at $100 per hundredweight, $4 slide. We derived our calf weight based on the 165,000 cow database that we used. We have a 20% cull rate. We're selling our cull cows at 50 cents a pound, 1 to 25 bull ratio, buying those for $2,000. And fun, we added in some land costs. Say you, the basis is $200 an acre, and you're docking 20 acres per animal unit, and we base that on a 1,200-pound animal. And then based on some Texas SPA data, we have a little over $430 for fixed cost per head. Fixed costs remain the same, and this is because, you know, you're not buying a new pickup. You're not buying, you know, more fences, more water tanks. If you're, you know, within a reasonable operation and a reasonable adjustment. Again, the variable feed costs are ignored, and we just gave a dollar amount to our non-feed variable costs, and then we adjusted for cull cow revenue because heavier cull cows are going to bring more than lighter cull cows, depreciation and bulls. And your net income, you're going to make more with lighter cattle. And we went right for the mill. We have 500, 1,200-pound cattle and then adjusted from there. So you're going to net more from your lighter cows because you're weaning more pounds. But this is a talk about efficiency. Net income is not efficiency. Why? Go back to the ratio. Net income is an output. What is your input? Assets. Return on assets is a measure of efficiency. You now have a ratio. So if we do that same exercise but include assets and non-land assets, we find very little difference. And, you know, we played with numbers and depreciation, salvage value, non-variable costs, and the basic message was it is extremely, extremely sensitive. Those numbers are very close and can switch order a little bit. So there is no silver bullet or home run. And it might be a little frustrating that the answer to what cow size is the right size, the classic graduate school answer is, it depends. It's frustrating, as always, but at least I know why now. So
it's extremely sensitive. And when we ran these different iterations, you know, if we changed the slide on that weight basis for those calves, it would adjust an unbelievable amount. Or if we changed what a cull cow was worth and the slide for that. And that goes to show this economic environment surrounding your ranch is a huge factor, a huge driver. And in a lot of ways, much more important than actually what you're doing on the ranch. This thing is real, and it's something that a lot of producers, the only time they think about it is when they go to sell calves, right? And that's it. And in this analysis, it's the biggest thing that cow size, you can go up and down. As long as you stayed within your production parameters, your guardrails of your specific environment, and if you got outside of it, you knew, right? If you got too big of a bull, a cow killer, and started having calving problems, that's right here. That's in your face. So these guardrails can be very apparent. Or if you have something, you're incredibly efficient at producing it, and the marketplace doesn't like it, it is right in your face. It's real, and it hurts. You know, getting outside those production parameters, those guardrails of your environment and your marketplace, it's a big deal to producers, and we try to avoid it. And risk management strategy is to do that.
Just to wrap it all up, we identified the components of efficiency and then offered some tools. And, you know, think about those as leverage points. Where can you make the most difference? As maybe cow size is not a huge leverage point in your operation. Maybe you should think about something else. To give you something solid to go home with, in a traditional cow-calf operation where you are selling calves at weaning, the most efficient cow is the one with the highest milk potential that can, and this is a big, without reducing the percentage of calves successfully weaned, very important, repeatedly produce a calf by bulls with the growth and carcass characteristics valued most in the marketplace. Okay, that's a mouthful. It's not quick. It's not simple. But maybe simple answers and quick yeses or nos are not what you want in this argument.
Hopefully, what we've done is provided framework and some tools for you to be able to go back to your operation and do these measurements yourself. You know, do your return on assets for your cow herd. Do these things. I mean, after all, it's the managers. It's the people on the ground that make things productive, right? They're not just out there on their own. I mean, us and the involvement with us and our environment is what makes these things work. It's not nature or laws of economics, especially governments. It's the humans, and it's the interaction, it's the connections, and it's the ability to be able to come to this room and bounce these ideas off of each other. And so my comment at the end of this whole thing is maybe we don't need to worry about better-sized cows. Maybe we need to worry about managers for the type of cows we have. We need to embrace the variation, as Dr. Dunn mentioned this morning, like the wine industry has. We're not all homogeneous. What's the quote? That I'm different, just like everyone else. Right? And so that's what makes us who we are. And so embrace it.
And so when you are asked or think about it and or hear someone else answer the question if someone comes up to them, what cow size is the most efficient? If you hear a quick answer, be a little suspicious that they've simplified something that is pretty complex and fascinating. But it goes back to the man, it takes thinking about, and it takes thinking about and understanding your particular operation. You have an answer to that. And there, a blanket answer is not right. So that's our presentation. We will now take questions.
We have time for two or three quick questions. Their presentation is saved up here on the computer.
Our paper is on the
paper.
Stick. I know.
The paper.
We hope
and
so.
More.
Any other?
Considering when that data was taken at the Meat Animal Research Center that ranked those different breeds of cattle for low, medium, and high feed resources, would some of those British breeds rank higher today than what they did when they did that study?
It depends.
He said it all.
You can't say it depends to this one. What's the definition of biologically efficient? What factors did you put into?
Biological efficiency is feed consumed. The pounds produced. And economic efficiency is basically dollars consumed to dollars produced.
So only feed consumed.
Correct.